I was wanting to have some kind of an epic introduction tonight for the podcast. Welcome, by the way, to another episode of Addiction and Codependency and Toxic Relationship. That's just too much to say. Breakthrough. I am so glad you're here. I am Heidi Rain. I am here with my epic, legendary husband, Doug McGurk. And together, we're going to talk about something so important tonight. I was so fired up about this topic. In fact, I've been keeping a running note in my phone. You do that too? You keep running notes in your phone?
Yeah, I do actually. I have several.
Yeah, so I forget about them usually. Yeah. But this one kept coming back up, especially when I would be in session with people that were really confused about, are they in the right place or not? You know that I deal with people who are in dysfunctional relationships, like addiction, addiction and codependency, right? But sometimes calling it addiction is a stretch for people when they don't quite know where their partner or spouse fits in. Are they actually an alcoholic? I mean, if you ask them, you know what they're going to say. They're going to say, I'm not an alcoholic.
I'm just fine.
You don't know what an alcoholic. In fact, when I actually was a binge drinker and people would ask me, hey, do you think you might be like an alcoholic, have a thing? And I'd be livid and I would go, I'm not an alcoholic. My dad's an alcoholic. Okay. I know what an alcoholic is. So when you think of an alcoholic,
this isn't one.
What do you think an alcoholic is? And in the traditional, what do you think most people, not you, but what do you think most people think when I say, hey, are they an alcoholic?
I would think the wake up at 8 a.m. first thing, crack a beer, have a drink, and basically drinking all day.
Do you picture somebody on the couch with their hands down their pants and like some kind of wife beater get up?
I didn't
with
until
like
now.
Greasy hair. Yeah, picture it. Picture okay. It. Beer nuts on the belly. Picture it. All right. He's got one hand in the can of beer nuts, another hand with a cigarette that's about to go out in an ash on a dirty couch, and beer stains, maybe some SpaghettiOs. Mm-hmm. On the side of the shirt, a little SpaghettiO action.
Yeah.
And we go, well, that's an alcoholic. It's certainly not going to be the guy in a suit that's going into the city every day, making a living of $350,000 a year to $500,000 a year, and a corporate person and firing on all cylinders. No, that's not an alcoholic. So I'm here to help today. And this is, I feel like, such an important topic because if you can't spot it, how do you know you got it? You know what I mean? Like, how do you know what help you're supposed to seek if you don't know if you qualify for that help or not? So I'm going to talk to you today about the different types of alcoholics. And I'm actually going to out myself as well of what type I was. Maybe you guys can guess. Let's play a little game, huh? Guess what kind of alcoholic I was. all right. So are you ready?
I think so.
By the way, we are now officially, look at us. I mean, look at this, right? I got podcast earbuds because I was listening back. I got the windscreen, baby. I got the blue light. I was listening to my episodes and I was always filming this for YouTube. So I was much more concerned about, how does this look? And is the lighting good? And frankly, I hate that. I'd rather just show up here and you're putting this, I'm too loud. Yep. Right, thank
little,
you. See, he's a producer. In. It's little, fine. Little perfect. I like to pop. That's my superpower.
That's true.
So I was like, but the sound is what's most important because most of the people that listen to this are listening through the podcast now. So I want to make sure that I'm really making sure when you're washing those dishes or you're out for a little walk around the lake and you got your pods in that you're feeling good.
Well, and generally speaking, note to self not to go off topic.
Oh, great, Doug.
Video is more forgiving than audio. So make sure the audio sounds great for that very reason. And then, of course, video is...
Yes. So we will be doing an epic introduction. I think we will include music. I mean, we might even just surprise you with some music today as we produce this show and get more and more into it. So, okay. Types of alcoholics is what we're going to talk about. The first type of an alcoholic is... maybe one you're familiar with. I hear it a lot in sessions. And this is the shameful, apologetic alcoholic. Now, here's how it goes down. By the way, this isn't to be funny. These are facts. All right. This isn't a comedy routine. All right. It might happen to be a little funny here and there, but life is kind of tragedy is kind of funny sometimes. Right. But this isn't meant to be funny or make fun of people. This is real life.
No, but anytime humor does come in, it's also to, make it
palatable.
Yeah.
Palatable. Yeah. Yes, exactly. So I want to tell you that I'm not trying to do this to be funny. Like, oh my God, you're this kind of alcoholic. It's so hilarious. It's not funny. Is it funny? I don't think it's funny. I think it's hurtful, but let's go on. Okay. So just know I'm not trying to make fun of anybody. And by the way, well, I can go off on a tangent here. The people that I serve are in the relationships with the addicts and alcoholics. If you're an actual alcoholic and you're listening to this, you're so far into recovery and seeking to like rectify your relationships that you're not going to be offended. You're going to be like, yep, that's the one I was.
Well, and actually, you know? I was with a friend today, and he was sharing that he went to an Al-Anon meeting once, and it was right next to the AA meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, I go in the Al-Anon meeting and everyone's just so dark and sad and like they like
it is dark and sad.
No, I know. No, but
honey,
he said in the on the other room though, they would be sharing their horror stories and they'd be yucking it up.
Oh,
and
shit.
So
wow.
Yeah.
That was freaking brilliant.
Eyes.
Legendary Doug.
Yeah,
that's what he does.
That's what I'm saying. So
listen, let's not skate past this. Two meetings side by side, firsthand account. One meeting is an alcoholic meeting. They're in there talking about their war stories and like laughing at each other and feeling like, oh God, thank God that's over. And the spouses are in the Al-Anon meeting in the next room, maybe not the same spouse. You know, on the other side are the spouses and nobody's laughing. They're crying. So that is the reality. And there's not a lot of help for people that are in relationships with addicts and alcoholics. And that's why I, Heidi Rain, have filled the gap. You're welcome. All right, let's go. The apologetic, shameful alcoholic. This one is hard to get mad at. You want to be mad. You're like, they did the thing again. You know, let's do something really serious. Let's say they drove with the kids under the influence. Let's say that. This is a big one, and I hear this one a lot. They drove with the kids under the influence, and by the grace of God, nothing bad happened. So the shameful, apologetic alcoholic has an episode that's pretty devastating, but what do? They come back and own it kind of immediately. You're not having to go to them and tell them that, hey, you screwed up. Look how bad this is. They're coming to you going, I can't believe I did that. That is so out of character for me. I'm never going to do that again. I've learned my lesson. This is so horrible. They cry. They feel terrible about it. They promise they're never going to do it again. And in that moment, you're feeling like, oh, thank God they're not an alcoholic. Right?
Because they owned it.
Yeah, you're like, an alcoholic doesn't realize, you know? So thank God they're not an alcoholic. They're just like, you know, it's a little bit of an issue.
They made a mistake.
They made a mistake. Now, how does this become a type of person? Well, types are the result of patterns, okay? So if it continues to happen where there are more instances where they have driven drunk again, then the apologetic alcoholic isn't truly sorry. The apologetic alcoholic is manipulating you to shut you up so that they can do again and just get you off their back. They're going to cut you off at the pass. They're going to tell you what you need to hear. They're going to do it before you do it so that they don't have to go through it. But there's no real change. And anytime there's an apology attached to nothing, it's a manipulation. An apology without change is an empty promise, right? So we don't fall for that. So do you want to say anything else about the apologetic alcoholic? What do you think?
Well, I agree. It's the... I think there is an element of they are sorry, but yeah. Because they're addicted, they can't help themselves again. Like,
yes,
that's the part of the brain that doesn't connect. So while it seems genuine at the time, it is genuine at the time. And yet once they get back into that mode, that's what makes it addiction, is the lack of ability to play the tape.
And this is where we get lost. That's a very good point, because where we get lost is we think, well, you know, they can see it, so they must not be an alcoholic. They're willing to change. But the very nature of addiction is a disease of denial. That is the foundational root of addiction, is denial. Well, the foundational root of relationship is attachment. That's my theory, and I'm writing a book to prove it. However, the foundation of addiction is built on denial. There is no truth. We talk about this a lot on this channel, on this podcast, about how you can't go searching for the truth in the land of lies, and you're looking to an alcoholic to tell you the truth about what's going on. It's like you're looking inside of a stone for a rain cloud. You know, I mean, this is like ridiculous. Okay. I don't know why that analogy came out. That was a weird one.
But it's not possible, so I guess it works.
Okay. Okay. Yes. Yes. Lindsay, thank you so much. This is important to realize. Yes, for sure. And I hope by the end of the tonight, we have so many more just epiphanies and, you know, we can all see, oh my God, this is actually real. This is what I'm dealing with. This one is really tough. This is so freaking tough for so many people. And there's so much I want to say about it. And I don't want to forget anything. I'm going to make myself a note. I'm so fired up. I'm afraid I'm going to forget something. Maybe that's my perimenopause talking.
It might be.
What do you think? Maybe. Okay. This is the Jekyll and Hyde alcoholic. This is so hard because they literally are two different people. So maybe for an extended period of time, they're two different people. Maybe within one day, they're two different people. But it looks like this. Heaven and hell. When it's good, it's good. Things are so great. And when it is bad, it is a shit show in the depths of hell. Okay. So Jekyll and Hyde is, let's use Richard. You know, Richard is like so nice and such an amazing guy. And he's so loving and he's a great father. And he comes home and he does, you know, he looks out for the kids and he helps you and he's eating dinner with you guys. And it's amazing. And you guys have this wonderful thing going. And then, you know, you can talk to Richard. Richard's, how's your day, honey? You know, it looks a little stereotypical because it's so good, right? You're like, wow. And then all of a sudden, around 5 o'clock, you get Dick, and not in a good way. Okay. All right.
I don't get it.
That's what I love about you. Okay. Your innocence. So yeah, you get the dick and it ain't pretty. It's not a good thing. You don't want that. And all of a sudden it's like, where'd that anger come from? Where'd that come from? Where that, wow, that's weird. You know, where did all that criticism emerge from? Hey, why are they? And then all of a sudden they lean on the apologetic alcoholic the next day and say, oh my God, I don't know. That wasn't me. Oh my God, I did that. Maybe you have even gone as far as to videotape it. Okay. Cause you know what happens when you're in this kind of relationship with a Jekyll and Hyde? You go, am I nuts? Am I crazy? So you start to take little notes in your phone like I take, and you start to, not on you, but on what I'm going to talk about. I do have a whole file on you, Doug.
You need more than a notepad?
Oh, baby, I need a whole iPad full. Okay, no. So, and I'm just kidding, baby, you know. So basically what happens with this person is when they wake up, they say, that's not me. And you want to believe that so badly because you're like, yeah, you're Richard. You're Richard. And you do this thing called splitting. And they're themselves when they're Richard, and they're not themselves when they're Dick. And the unfortunate thing is, a Dick is a Richard, and a Richard is a Dick. All right, that's all we need to know. However, the most addictive type of relationships on the planet are based upon a concept called intermittent reward. Douglas, who else does intermittent reward?
Who else does intermittent reward?
What things in life? Can you think of something that does? Well, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose.
You know, you go to Vegas, you might see some opportunities.
Boom, there, okay. Vegas knows this better than anybody else because it's all a slot machine and it hooks you in because sometimes the lights are going, da, 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 I'm feeling lucky today. Everything lines up and it's like, you could pull that lever 500 times and one time you win and you're like the holy
grail. That was worth it.
That was worth it. Is you think, well, the richer is worth the dick. Not sure about that. Okay. Sometimes if you had a better relationship, the dick might be worth the Richard, but not in this case. Okay. Not in this case. Guys, in case you don't know, you know, I'm not afraid to take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand. I'm not afraid to say things that make my upper lip sweat. So here's the thing. All right. The Jekyll and Hyde keeps you stuck because you continually hold out hope that they're going to change into this other person. So
it's like one step forward, two steps back.
That's right. And it also clouds your judgment as far as what's really going on here. Mm-hmm. They are, in fact, an alcoholic, a normal person that drinks like a regular social drinker, does not turn in to somebody else. under the influence. That is somebody who's really progressed along in their relationship with alcohol, their toxic relationship with alcohol, and it's late in the game for them. It's not like, oh, I just, it's a pattern at this point. And that's what addiction is, right? It's an attachment to a way of doing things.
Was that the notes and everything? You took a note. I know you were going to, oh, you got it. Yeah.
Intermittent. Thank you. Look at you. Support. High five for support.
Sure.
Okay, I know what it's like to go off on tangents.
Yes. All right. This one is sad because it's everything we do, by the way, we enable, okay? When we're in a relationship with an addict or alcoholic, we don't want to. We think we're being loving, and you are such a loving person. So you're like, oh, I'm being so loving. But whenever you buy into this, okay, like the apologetic alcoholic drives drunk with the kids, and then the next day they apologize, you rationalize the alcoholism. And you say, they were out of character, that was only that one time, they're so sorry, they're mortified, it's never going to happen again. And I'm here to tell you, as sure as I know tomorrow's coming, within reason. For most of us.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, the sun will likely rise tomorrow.
You know, the sun's going to come up is a better sure thing than I'm not going to wake up dead. Thank you. Yes. As sure as I know the sun is going to rise tomorrow, I know that that will happen again. It will happen again. So what do you need to do? You need to start to think about doing some hard things. I know one of the hard things that you've been doing is probably going into Al-Anon or talking to somebody and like even admitting that this is going on. You've been doing lots of hard things, but in therapy, maybe you're going in and the hard thing you're doing is learning how to cope with the alcoholic. I love therapy and I love Al-Anon and I love all those things. But what I don't love is going somewhere where you talk to somebody who makes you feel better for the moment so you can go back in and sign up for more shit.
Well,
can we just let that land?
Oh, sorry.
Let that look.
Say it again.
When I say something, you gotta, because I don't like people who go.
Inspires me.
I don't like people who go, let me say that again. I mean, you know, but so, let it drop, right? I mean, that was. What? I don't even remember what
say,
I said because I was in the moment. Oh yeah, things make you feel better. You go into therapy. You talk for an hour. You're like, oh my god, thank you so much. I feel so much better. Oh my god, somebody gets that. Somebody understands. And then you go, and all that does is jazz you up and juice you up enough to go back in for round two. And you're like a boxer in the corner, and he's going, come on, Mickey. Come on, Mickey. You know, you got the stitches, and he's giving you smelling salts. He's like, come on, bitch, wake up. You know, and you go back. I mean, it's not, did you lose your thought?
No, I remember my thought. Okay, because, well, the thought was, that's the perfect example.
Why am I sweating?
Because you're getting all
okay.
Hot.
All
right. Coming in hot.
Damn.
Is the road to hell is paved with good intentions. That's one of the sort of reasons, the experiences behind that is that we do things thinking we're doing the right thing when it's right to feel good, but not long term. And then we're making our way down to hell. So,
thank you, Doug.
You're welcome.
For that fan break.
You're welcome. Oh, no, you're welcome.
Nice. Okay. This one is another way that we minimize or justify or rationalize somebody's drinking. And this is the depressed alcoholic. And depression's a real thing. You know, I have clinical depression, major depressive disorder. I've said that many times on this channel. I've been talked openly about dealing with depression. I am not minimizing. I hate when people say minimalizing.
Mm, yeah, it's not really a word. I mean, I guess it is, but it doesn't sound right.
Okay.
Just like irregardless, isn't
it? Yeah, I'm not minimizing because I know people medicate, obviously. Obviously, you're going to medicate with alcohol, but you can't let that be the thing, okay? So if you have somebody who's depressed and you know they are sad, they have legitimate depression. They have legitimate anxiety. So the anxious, depressed alcoholic, okay? The neurotic alcoholic. They've got reasons in the arsenal. All right. If this was like a bow and arrow contest, they'd like have like 15 arrows, you know, to hit the target of like why they drink. It's not a mystery why they're doing it. But what happens is they say to you, well, I'm doing this because I just have this depression and I just want to feel better. So a little glass of wine makes me feel better at the end of the night. It's never a little glass of wine. It's a bottle, you know. Or, you know, when I smoke some weed and I drink a little bit, you know, I just feel a little bit better. But it's never a little bit. It's always a lot of bit. It's always creating issues and problems and challenges. Or, you know, I'm just anxious and I've just got to have those beers before I do anything. So you can look at this person and go, I get it. You know, I get it. You definitely are entitled. This sounds right, you know, but, and then you feel bad because there's a bit of truth to it. But the reality is alcohol is a depressant. And at this point, it's very difficult to distinguish between the chicken and the egg. So, and again, alcohol is not a cure for depression and anxiety. Weed is not a cure for depression and anxiety. A lot of the medications that people are taking are not a cure for anything that we take for anything at all, okay, is an aid as part of a tool and a tool belt.
A temporary intervention.
All right. So I do know people who have used substances as interventions, as part of a plan, you know, as part of a program. Some people have gone to ayahuasca retreats and done that as a gateway into deeper understanding and experiment with plant medicine and things like this. I'm not really talking about that. I'm talking about a patterned person that every day is having a six pack and weed and they're drinking 2 bottles of wine and they're telling you it's because they're medicating their anxiety and depression. That is not a good plan. Don't co-sign that. Say, I understand your depression and anxiety is real, but this isn't a way to treat it. This is alcoholism, because it is. Okay. Oh, all right. I feel like a teacher. I feel like I'm
lecturing.
Yeah, I do.
And another thing.
Well, our daughter says that, and because you started this. So I used to drive through our neighborhood and I don't know when I turned in this person. I was probably born this way, really, thinking back. You know, 9 going on 40. When you grew up in an alcoholic home, you pretty much are 9 going on 40 if you're that person. And we're driving through the neighborhood, and the kids are doing wheelies, and they're like up on 2 wheels, and these teenagers, and I'm like, crazy teens! I'm like, I hope they wreck! And then I'm like, how morbid, how disgusting that I actually, yeah, look at me, I'm nuts. I actually hope they wreck so they can learn a lesson so I don't have to watch them wreck, and how dare them make me anxious and watch their wheelie adventures.
Yeah,
listen, so you were saying, old lady McGurk, right? Old lady McGurk's at it again in the neighborhood. So I'll tell you this story real quick before we go. It's like a little break here. Doug and I were driving to Disney with Ellie and her best friend. And we were parked at the hotel. You were parked because you were going to go in and check in.
Yeah.
And Ellie always comes up to the front and sits on my lap. And we were tickling and laughing and joking like we always do. We're just great. We're just nut jobs. Okay. I know.
Mm-hmm.
We're crazy.
You felt it?
Yeah. And so she's laughing so hard. And I'm in the passenger seat. And she's like on my lap, and I go, stop it, you're gonna make us wreck. She goes, we're parked, grandma. I was like, oh, shit. I don't think I laughed that hard in a really long time. I laugh so hard. So now whenever I overreact to something, she goes, you're parked, grandma.
So, okay. You must hear that a lot.
She's not. Okay, let's go next. The weekend alcoholic.
The weekend warrior.
The weekend alcoholic. Yes, formerly known as the weekend warrior. Listen, this is a tough one because if you're thinking that alcoholic is a person who can't stop every day and they have to get up and drink or they're shaking or they're whatever, there's a lot of different flavors of alcoholism, and the weekend alcoholic is a real thing. And what makes it a real thing from a person who just likes to go out on a Friday night and have some cocktails with their friends? Like, let's say you go out and drink on the weekends. Are you a weekend alcoholic? Well, here's the difference. Does that person drink on the weekends and get drunk and something stupid happens? Are they checked out emotionally, mentally, physically, or financially? Does their alcohol take them out of themselves and they lose themselves over the course of the weekend? Are they going into the weekend to attempt to check out with alcohol or drugs on purpose? Then that is a weekend alcoholic. And so you might be saying as a spouse, or they say to you, hey, Monday through Friday, I go to work. I pay all the bills. I do all the things I need to do.
I just need a release.
I just need to. Yeah, you know, I mean. I'm acting like I've heard that before. You have never said that to me.
I know. In our I did take a second take when you made that face. And I was like, yeah, what did I just say?
I don't know. My mind is so dirty. It's just a dirty, dirty place.
You can tell how dirty I just got.
You're a dirty birdie. What's that? That's from that movie, Dirty Bird. It's from where she hit him with the sledgehammer in the legs. And she was an author, and she wrote her book. Misery. Oh, my God.
That was a good book. I read that in one night.
Did you? Yeah. Mm. And then you're like, this looks familiar. Just kidding.
Yeah.
So because you don't know, because they're telling you, hey, all weekend long, you know, I'm good during the week. And back to Monday, it's normal again. So it's very hard. Even if they had to blow up an episode, they're back to normal. And yes, or sabotaging weekend plans so they can drink. Yes, this is an alcoholic. It's not somebody who just likes to party on the weekends. And as they get older and older, those seasons in between, weekends become Thursday. All right. Weekends become Fridays in the morning. Weekends become call off on a Monday. It starts to stretch out. Now, this one everybody knows, and this is the angry alcoholic. And this is the one everybody thinks drives you in for help.
Mm.
This is the one people picture like, wow, they're like breaking things. They're slamming stuff. They're like, you picture the dysfunctional family over with the turkeys and dad's pulling the knife and the turkey and flipping the table. And you're like, sorry, but that was my life.
Yeah.
No,
but actually what brings me up, brings the thought up is the idea that now the behavior is impacting them on a physical level. Or a deeper emotional level, as opposed to the, because like it's harder to come back from the anger and the breaking the stuff and like the craziness than it is like,
that's exactly right.
I had a oopsie last
That's exactly
night.
Right. So this person, this is why everybody thinks, oh, it has to be that bad
right.
for me to actually get a course, hire a coach, hire a crisis relationship interventionist like myself. You know, like, what am I going to do? And it's really not. I'm describing all these other things because they are just as devastating. It's just as devastating to think you have one life Monday through Friday, and on the weekends, you're lost and alone and drowning in sorrow of trying to make sense of your life. That's harder. Mm-hmm. That's harder than, I think, than every day, like, because you're on this ride back and forth, and that's what's crazy making. So
and it's that much more painful because it's feeling the attack, the personal attack.
And we want the apology. You know, we get addicted to the apologies.
Yeah.
We really do. And especially if we grew up in addiction or dysfunction where we never heard anybody say we're sorry or understand they were hurting us, we can get into these relationships and then, well, at least they're sorry. That's our barometer. At least they're sorry because nobody was ever sorry before.
Yeah.
Well, that's better. That's better.
It's a start.
But it ain't enough.
Yeah.
Okay, there's more to do. By the way, we're going to take a little pause for our sponsor here today. We are proudly sponsored by Doug and Heidi McGurk on this episode, a podcast episode. And Doug and Heidi McGurk have so wonderfully laid out all of the tools and resources that you need in order to deal with the addict or alcoholic in your life. It is called the Addiction Family Survival Toolkit. And you can find that over at HeidiRain.com under Dealing with Addiction in the Family or Addiction in the Family. In this kit, you have hours and hours of live recorded coaching content on subjects like staying or going, gaslighting, manipulating, filing for divorce, not filing for divorce, how to tell children. Everything you could possibly imagine is covered, plus A to Z on an educational track of how addiction happens, what does recovery look like, and how to get somebody the best possible help. Also, my husband is a certified hypnotherapist, and in that is endless hours of hypnotherapy and a whole course on how to manage your emotions in the middle of a shitstorm. We encourage you to get your hot little beautiful hands on that immediately. Go over to HeidiRain.com. Thank you, Doug and Heidi, for sponsoring this.
You're welcome.
All righty. Let's keep... Oh, my God. All right. Let's keep going. So this one is kind of like a weekend, but a little worse. It is called the episodic alcoholic, also known as the binge alcoholic, episodic alcoholic, or periodic alcoholic. And this person can go longer than a weekend. This is one of the craziest patterns of an alcoholic. They, and by the way, I say alcoholic. Trust me when I tell you, I can insert gambling, sex,
all behavior addictions.
All behavior addictions, any drugs. You know, I can just say anything. But this is really hard because months can go by. And then the argument is, I'm not an addict. I'm not an alcoholic. Look, I can go months. I can go weeks. And they do. They do. They go long periods of time.
And occasionally may have just a drink or two.
That's the worst, isn't it?
Yeah.
When they're at dinner and they go, oh, I can, like, I just have a glass of wine. See? Look at me. Like, they'll even, like, have the glass of wine, which is my candle here, my Yankee. Oh, this is yours. This is leather. I don't do leather candles, but you do. Smells like a man.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the other one's tobacco.
Burns like a lady, smells like a man. Okay. So, I don't know what that means. Hopefully it's not like a venereal disease. Like burns like a lady. What is wrong with me tonight?
I don't know.
I need to get it together. Yeah. What was I saying? I lost my train of
thought.
Drinking
the glass of wine.
Look, I'm at wine with dinner. Look at this. I love that glass of wine. I love so nice. The body in this is really nice. Like I'm pretending like I'm a connoisseur now. It is just, wow, that was just delicious. You know what? I've had enough.
Long
pregnant pause, looking at your face, making sure it's registering. And if it doesn't register, I'll say, I just want you to pay attention. I can have one. I just want you to draw your attention here.
Yep.
I, in fact, can have one and be done. Thanks for playing. The who's an alcoholic, you lost.
I wonder if someone brings that up, if they know there might be an issue.
They do. If they're one and done, they'll say, last week we went to the Johnsons and I had, what did I do? Did you watch me at the Johnsons? Did you see the alcohol coming around? Did you watch me have, how many glasses of wine did you see me have at the Johnsons? I had one glass of wine. If I'm an alcoholic, how could I go to the Johnsons and have one glass of wine? What's the matter with you, right? So an episodic periodic alcoholic can go lots of stretches in between. And still, when they use the substance, their life goes off the rails. These are the disappearing people. These are the people who will go on a bender. You won't see them. They'll hide out. You don't know where they are. You're like, what happened? You know, they don't always disappear. Sometimes they do this stuff right in your own home, but it takes them weeks or days, sometimes even months, to get back on track. Or it could be like, you know, a 5-day thing. Where they go on, you know, every Christmas they go off the rails or whatever. So what do you do in a situation like that? So much of the work that we do is helping you decide what you're signed up for. You need to know nothing's right or wrong. Do I stay with an episodic alcoholic? Do I stay with a weekend warrior? If I wanted to stay with a weekend warrior, how would I do that? These are questions I want to help you answer and can help you answer, because it's not like you should just leave if that's not the plan for you. Maybe there's a different way for you, and we got to figure out what that is. Hi, Doug.
Hi.
The responsible alcoholic. This is a version of a person who drinks, like acts like a fool, forgets their name, goes out socially, acts like a crazy cuckoo bird, and wakes up and goes to the gym and gets a green smoothie on the way.
I think I know people like that.
You do? Who do you know like that? They get up, they go to work, they make it happen, they never miss a day, they do everything, they drink green smoothies, they go to the gym, and they drink like a fish and forget their own name, and they wake up when the alarm goes off.
Yeah, it was just funny. This morning at the gym, someone said, oh, he's coming in from the sauna, he tied one on last night, and he's sweating it out.
That's right. Hey, they know what to do, right? Yeah. They get drunk, they go. This is also called the functioning alcoholic, is the responsible alcoholic. And this one's really tough, especially, I find that, okay, a lot of the clients that I get, I have men and women equally in my coaching and courses and things like this. Men tend to stay in these because they want to see if they can save the dream. You know, a lot of the times men get in a relationship with a woman that they need to rescue. And they feel like, you know, I can save her, and they try everything they can to do it. And until they realize what will happen usually is they have kids, and the kids start to notice, and they start to go, I want to be a good husband, but I got to be a good dad. You know, that's the calls I get. And by the way, if you want to book a consultation, you can do that over at HeidiRain.com. And the women who stay in these dynamics are either two kinds of women. they're the they reach out. There's two kinds of women that reach out. One is the breadwinner woman, who she works her ever-loving ass off. She takes care of everything. She pays all the bills. She runs the whole show. And he is, like, not doing a damn thing. He's, like, laying around. He's drinking. He's, like, not showing up for work. He's, like, lazy. And she's making the whole thing go down, and she just wants him to step up. Or there's also, and sometimes he does and sometimes he doesn't, or a woman who he is the successful person in the relationship and he's making all the financial decisions. And I'm going to tell you who it's harder for is sometimes that woman who feels like she has to rob Peter to pay Paul. She channels that inner, for lack of a better word, it's like a transactional relationship where she's like, well, is this what I have to put up with in order to have what I want? And I'm telling you, no, it's not.
And that's oftentimes also addiction to other things.
Mm-hmm. I have so many, but I'm not going to go through all of these tonight. If you want more, we'll do another series on this. Another one is a garage alcoholic. This is where you never see them drinking. The kids never see them drinking, but they like come in from the garage and they fall down. And you're like, what the hell's going on in the garage? They hide it.
It's my workshop.
They hide it everywhere. And I've had people say, I don't know how somebody is so drunk because they only had like two beers. Honey, they're drinking shots. It's just like alcoholism is like a cockroach farm. You know what I mean? It's like you go into the hoarder house. Alcoholism is like a hoarder house.
An emotional hoarder house?
It's an emotional hoarder house. You go into that house and you start piling up the carpet and maybe one little scurry little roach runs across. And then all of a sudden you pull back the wall and there's the infestation. And you're like, holy shit, that's alcoholism. So, all right, garage alcoholic, religious alcoholic. This one's really hard. This is one that goes to church and gets resaved every Sunday. They pray to Jesus. They know that God's going to relieve the obsession from them. I did a whole episode just on the lie people tell that God saved them and why, even though God does help people and pour into people, we still have to do the damn thing. Okay.
Is it pray like everything depends on God and act as if everything depends on you?
Said in your radio voice.
Indeed.
Hey guys, this one's especially for the men. Okay. So women, you don't have to listen to this one if you don't want to, but maybe you can remember and praise and say, amen, hallelujah. I'm so glad that she's talking about this. Okay. The promiscuous alcoholic. This is if you're a man, you're in a relationship with a woman who, when she drinks, she suddenly wants to fuck you. She suddenly wants to have sex with you. She becomes available. She opens up. She loosens up. She's ready to go. It's not your favorite thing. It's not your first choice. You certainly would love her to be alive and with it, okay? But you'll take anything because the only time she's interested in you or wants you is when she's had a couple. Whoa, you're in a tricky spot. Because on the one hand, you're like, well, I love her and I want to have sex with her. And so if I ask her to stop drinking, she will not want to have sex with me. So
if she doesn't drink, she won't.
If she doesn't drink, she won't have sex with me. So
it's a lose-lose.
Listen, I'm going to tell you something right now. Nothing is sexier than a man who stands the ground for the woman that he loves. Okay? Nothing is sexier than a man who's prepared to go to battle for the woman he loves. And the battle is won by taking a stand, by saying, I love you too much to do this to you. I want you to love you too much to do this to you, but I'm going to love you enough for the both of us and say that intimacy comes from a place of authenticity from here on out. And that's going to take some courage on your part, but I want you to understand that you giving into that and placating that is helping her hurt herself. And that's not okay. There, the more you know. Now the rainbow goes over with the star.
I should get that sound effect.
All right, guys. I think that's quite enough.
I think
what about the closet drinker?
That's pretty much the same as the garage drinker.
It's the garage alcoholic.
It's the hiding.
It's the garage alcoholic. Yes, the closet alcoholic is the same thing. This is a person who does everything behind the scenes. And this is what I was talking about with the hoarder episode. Once you uncover it, you're like, oh, wow. I had no idea. Cindy wants to know, how can some people drink a lot and never seem drunk? Well, I think there's a certain point in alcoholism where, and with any drug, okay, when I first start taking something, the first time I have it, let's use, okay, there's a dopamine percentage for all the different types of drugs, okay? So, and any substance is providing a dopamine rush. So whenever I have a substance, let's just take an Oreo cookie, for example. I have an Oreo cookie. I increase my happiness, my dopamine, by 50%. So maybe you might not notice that, right? You might not, right? Maybe a little bit. But if I have a glass of wine and I increase my dopamine by a couple 100%, then I start to feel really good. And you might notice that, right? But eventually, the more I provide the dopamine through the substance, my brain stops production of the dopamine and starts to rely on the substance to get it. So where I started initially with my substance, I'm now at a deficit because now my brain's not producing those feel-good chemicals anymore. And that's why all the things that used to make me happy and let me up don't. And now I'm drinking to feel normal. Now I'm not drinking to feel fucked up. I'm drinking to feel normal. I'm using to feel normal, not get high. In fact, it's hard for people to get high. They try to get high so much that they die trying to get high, okay? Because they don't even realize they're not getting there. They're not getting there anymore. They need more. They need more. They need more. There's a great video that, or a great episode called the best and simplest explanation of addiction of all time. It is on this channel. I highly encourage you to watch. I am going to refilm it because I did it one night during a storm and it's not the best. So,
but it's called the best. So it is.
It is. Yeah. So that explains how addiction happens. It's a miraculous. Maybe I'll do that on another live sometime. Okay. Any other questions? Let us know. Final call for questions tonight. And by the way, we are here every single Wednesday night with a different topic. The podcast of this episode will drop on Monday. So it's Wednesday night when we film, and Monday is the podcast drop. So if you're a podcast listener, hello. It's so lovely to not see you, but be with you on your walk or doing the dishes or your gym. If you want to catch me live and you want to come on and talk with us or ask a question, you're more than welcome to come on here. If you want to remain anonymous, no worries. We also are streaming live in our private hidden Facebook group, which is Addiction and Codependency Breakthrough with Heidi Rain. You can also kind of watch in there, and there's other people watching with you. Maybe you can start a little watch party. That'd be fun. Okay, one more question. If you're turned off by the alcoholic and you distance yourself, they accuse you of not caring. Then they go out and cheat. Do they not see or care why you are distancing yourself from them? So, okay, this is such a complex thing. So, the nature of addiction is denial. There is no self-responsibility, self-accountability. There is no insight. There is no self-reflection. The name of addiction is blame, gaslighting, guilt tripping, and crazy town. These are the languages that it speaks in. So rightfully, you get into a relationship with an alcoholic and they hurt you. So what do you start to do? Like any normal person, you start to build up your walls because you're like, I gotta protect myself here. And then what happens is when you get the walls going, you start to feel like, okay, then they blame you for their behavior. They blame their behavior on your walls. Well, if you weren't like Alcatraz, if you give it up every now and again, if you didn't act that way, if you act like you love me, I wouldn't be in this situation. You've got to remember the crazy's crazy. And if it sounds crazy, it probably is. So you could just do a simple check to see if that's true or not in your own mind before you start believing the hype. And you go, how long have they been drinking? How long have I had walls? have I ever not had walls and had sex with them and they drank the next day? Have I ever had a great night of sex with them? Like, there's nothing you're doing. And they don't realize it because they can't. Because addiction is narcissistic. Addiction and narcissism are the same game. So how can a narcissist hurt your feelings? They lack empathy and insight. How can an alcoholic who's actively active, alcoholic hurt your feelings? They lack empathy and insight. And when they cheat on you, they have absolutely no regret, remorse. They might when they get caught. But the truth is, addiction goes, I want what I want. I want it now. I don't care what happens with anybody else when I get it. I'll do what I can do to get it. And I don't fucking care who I hurt. And I don't care what's in my way. Now, inside, there might be a little piece of them that's like, I don't want to be doing this. But that part is the addictive personality takes over. It's like a little devil that comes up and goes, fuck them all. And until somebody's sober, that's never going to change. Ever.
And I think...
Makes sense.
Yeah. I think good. Probably if that's a situation you are in, you might want to... That was a 30,000 foot view. You might want to book a call.
Let's get a strategy session. Let me help you.
Yeah, because that's... It really does start messing with every area of your life.
Yeah.
Because you start lowering your tolerance like dealing with stuff we could allow other parts of our life start to suffer and not realize it because it's like nickel and diming our emotional energy and our abilities to manage.
It's true. She said, thank you so much, Heidi. I understand now. And I'm going to tell you something. Understanding is the first step, right? Awareness, that's why we come here and pour our heart, and that's why we have the podcast. And for those of you who want to go deeper or support the mission and support us in what we're doing, and you want more information, you can go over to HeidiRain.com. If you want to donate books, if you want to scholarship a course for somebody if it's not for you, or if you want to get the course yourself, everything that you do helps us help more people. And that's why we created these resources for you, is because they're important to the mission. They're important for us to be able to keep creating what we need to create and putting it out there and helping as many people as we can. So we love you. We are so glad this has been helpful for you, and we want you to take excellent care of yourself. And I'm going to go get in a hot bath. Oh, you're going to take us out something sexy or a little closed-eye meditation? How about a meditation?
We could.
How about a little, assimilate the knowledge?
Yeah. So if you are going to do that and you're driving, keep your eyes on the road, please. But if you're not, and you've been having some aha moments, why don't you go ahead and take a nice... big, deep cleansing breath in. Close your eyes and relax. As you exhale, allow all of the ideas, the energies that came in, just settle down and release any stress and embrace the peace. And when you came on, I wonder, did you already know this was something you were wrestling with? Or did you get even more clarity what kind of situation you are in? Who can you help most right now is the question. And that would be you, isn't it? And as you take these awarenesses, these aha moments, these learnings, the brilliance of Heidi getting in your conscious and other than conscious mind right now, relax and know that you have been doing the very best you could. And the fact that you are here means that you are on the path, ready to take even more action, to take a stand for yourself, to own your worth, your value. And as you take another big, deep cleansing breath in and relax, know that tonight, as you slumber, you will integrate and align what you truly believe and get even more clear as to what your next steps will be, won't you? Knowing that everything you need is within your reach, and all you need to do is take hold and bring that in and incorporate that into your being. Know that you are highly favored, blessed, and truly loved. Receive that. We love you for who you are and who you aren't.